Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, welcome back to a Wednesday night edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. Harmon Dial is here. Harmon, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well as always. How are you, man?
I'm good. The young sensation. I was telling somebody about you yesterday, and I don't think anybody knows or would assume how old you are. Like, that is the whiz kid is how I describe you, the hockey whiz.
Oh man, you're making me blush.
No, it's true. You're like, I would have I don't know. It's baffling that you can pull it off at 13 years old, I believe.
19 now, actually.
19. Okay.
Maybe, but that's why people are so impressed.
Right.
They think I'm 13, not 19.
Like, you're not even in the 20s yet. That's the most important thing here. But anyway, you are the Canucks beat writer for The Athletic Vancouver. You host the Game Theory podcast. You are a busy guy, but I always enjoy talking hockey with you. And I'm excited to talk about a couple things, because I think now that we're a quarter of the way into the season, I think it's time that we go ahead and we just have to start with the Edmonton Oilers being on pace to win 50 games. Do you believe that's attainable and that this team is for real?
I don't. Now, whether they can make the playoffs or not, that's an entirely different question, as far as that's, I think, realistically attainable given the state of the Pacific Division. But I think if you look at a lot of their underlying numbers, the Oilers aren't really controlling a lot of even strength play. They're consistently getting outshot and outchanced. As we all know, they're always going to be top heavy and extremely dependent on Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And heaven forbid, if one of those two are Ryan Nugent-Hopkins or James Neal ever goes down, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. But I think the biggest thing so far, and this is the one aspect for me that I think is probably unsustainable, is the level of goaltending they've gotten from Mike Smith, who's in his late 30s, and you usually don't see a goaltender like that rebound as well as he has. And then Mikko Koskinen, who was written off not only by many on the media side of things, but a lot of NHL executives just aren't. Like, when The Athletic did their anonymous GM poll of all the different starting goaltenders in the league, Koskinen ranked near the bottom. And so if you look at what type of goaltending Edmonton has gotten so far, it's not outside of this world. We're talking about a shade under 913, which is still top 10 in the league. But between that and the fact that they're shooting at a pretty high clip. I think they're in for some regression just because they've had a little bit of puck luck. So I think 50 wins is a little bit too far, but I think if they stay relatively healthy, they certainly still have a shot to make the postseason.
So it sounds like you just don't think they can really contend for the cup. Do you, like, are they in a different tier? Like, what are your tiers right now?
Yeah, to me, I'd have to spend a lot more time on it, but I definitely don't have Edmonton in the legitimate Stanley Cup contender bracket yet. And like Leon Draisaitl, like, he's a hell of a player, but he's not going to continue scoring 36 points every 20 games. So it's one of those things where everything has seemingly gone right for the Oilers so far, and some of those things aren't going to last over a full 82 games.
Yeah, it seems kind of boring right now in who tier one is. Like, the Blues are just awesome again. You look at certain teams like that, that just we're kind of overthinking it. The Bruins are awesome again. The Capitals are awesome again. The Islanders are awesome again. It's not a lot of turnover.
Yeah, I think you do have a few different teams fighting in the mix, but more or less, to me, it's funny because aside from Arizona really taking that next step and they're 11-6-2, and of course Vancouver has gone off to a pretty hot start, there aren't a lot of surprise stories. But in having said that, there isn't a whole, like, there aren't many teams that are out of it right now. Like, if you even look, for instance, Tampa Bay as it stands, and mind you, they have games in hand, but for instance, they're 21st in the league right now, but they're 8-5-2. So they're off, of course, relative to their own standards, it's not a hot start, but it's still like 8-5-2 is a pretty good record. And of course they're going to, like, I'd be shocked if they didn't.
Even, the offense just, it's good, but not great. Like, there's nothing. I don't know. Like, they're on my list. Like, what do you make of Tampa Bay right now?
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's a team. They just have so much, a combination of both elite shooting talent and with Andre Vasilevsky between the pipes, good goaltending as well. So I think that's an example of a team that'll probably rebound. And I haven't actually checked out a lot of the special teams data yet, but I imagine that's one of the areas where I don't think they've gotten off to a blindingly good start. And I'll look it up right now, but point being, I think they're just too talented not to get on a hot roll. And yeah, I mean, 8-5-2 is still a fine start. It's just the point that I was making was in the NHL right now, because of the parity, it seems like everyone's on a really level playing field aside from the obvious rebuilding teams like your LA Kings, Senators, your Red Wings. And of course, there are a couple disappointments in there. Chicago, Columbus,
Devils,
Wild, but on the whole, I think the league is very competitive right now. It's just, yeah, as you said, there isn't a whole lot of change in the tier one as far as who's a legit cup contender, aside from maybe Colorado.
Yeah. Are you a Colorado believer?
You know, it's interesting because at the start of the year, I wasn't very optimistic about them. I felt that they were maybe a year away from that, but the big difference has been their depth, and I liked the additions of, for instance, Jonas Donskoy and Andrei Burakovsky, but I did not, for instance, expect Donskoy to have 9 goals already and 14 points in 18 games. Burakovsky's been excellent. Kadri's fit in really well. And I think the biggest difference has been Philip Grubauer between the pipes has been really solid in it. And I think that was by my biggest concern was they were losing Varlamov as well, who was sort of the 1B in their tandem rotation last year. And you look at Grubauer's performance so far, he's at a solid 9.15 clip. I think he was a little bit, like, he came out of the gate lights out, and so I think he's regressed a little bit. But I think on the whole, to me, goaltending is going to be the key for them, and it's been absolutely ridiculous what Cale Makar has done so far. Like, talk about a guy who he's got 18 points in 18 games as a rookie defenseman. Like, that is amazing. And you rarely ever see defensemen win the Calder Trophy, but this could very well be the year.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like how many times have we had a back-to-back repeat Stanley Cup final with
the Blues and the Bruins also.
I think the last time was probably 08-09 with Detroit and Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
In back-to-back years.
Hmm. Pittsburgh, another team going through it right now. Crosby out. They're hanging around, but they're interesting. I mean, do you think they're a playoff team? Do you think the Penguins can hold on?
Yeah, that to me is a really tough one. But I think if you look at a lot of the players that have stepped up in their void, for instance, Jared McCann has done well, and he's obviously had to carry a lot of that load now. And he's got 11 points in 16 games, 6 goals. He's looked pretty promising, and I think it's very important that they got Evgeny Malkin back just as Crosby exited the lineup, because I think if you had both Malkin and Crosby out for, say, 2 or 3 weeks or even longer, then perhaps that's a situation where they're in a little bit of trouble. You look at it right now, they're 10-6-2, and to me, I think a lot of people tend to forget just how good Jake Guentzel is as well. A lot of times, and it's quite natural when you have a guy playing next to Sidney Crosby or Evgeny Malkin that he sometimes gets overlooked a little bit, but Guentzel scored 40 goals last year, and he's been really hot again. So between him and McCann and some of the other players that are stepping up, I think they've got enough offense where they can sustain, say, a 4-week period without Crosby. If it's longer, like if you're talking about 2 or 3 months without him, then I think it's a little bit difficult. But if Evgeny Malkin is one of those players who, if he turns it on, when he's at the peak of his game, he can be the best player in the league. Now, he can be inconsistent, which is why, for instance, last year he struggled, but he really had a chip on his shoulder coming into this campaign. And so this opportunity now without Crosby also gives him that opportunity to show people he still got it, because he wants to prove people wrong. There have been a lot of people doubting him. There were, you know, outside speculation of potential trade rumors swirling. Malkin's going to want to prove himself, and I think this is one of those chances for him to really step up to the occasion, and I think that's what I expect to see out of him.
What do you make of the Coyotes extending their GM this week?
Yeah, I think John Chyka, to me, just I kind of look at the Coyotes as overall rebuild to this point, and I can see them being a good team. And you talk to any, like in the preseason, when I talked to a lot of the players in the Canucks dressing room, and what I did was I ran a player poll of which team do you think would surprise people. And I got a couple of answers of Arizona, because the players were just lauding how hard the Coyotes work. They've got that dog on a bone mentality. And yeah, to this point, they absolutely have. And I think if you look at some of the underlying metrics, they're certainly controlling play pretty well at even strength. To me, though, I look at the bigger picture, and they just don't have elite talent as it stands. I don't think they've done a particularly good job drafting, and it's kind of hard. Like, you need your franchise cornerstone pieces to win a Stanley Cup, and that to me is the biggest beef that I have with the Coyotes. I find it difficult to see a path where they have the elite talent to, in the long run, win a Stanley Cup. Now, how much of that falls at Chyka's feet, that's certainly debatable. Personally, I'm a little bit on the outside, so I, of course, need to do a little bit of digging on this, but I'm definitely on the fence, because you look at some of their recent moves too, like acquiring Phil Kessel, for instance. I wasn't really a huge fan of that, because he's 32 years old and you've already seen signs of a decline. He's on a big contract. He's got 10 points in 19 games. And before that, Alex Galchenyuk, the player who went to Pittsburgh, he was acquired from Max Domi, and Domi's been an excellent player. Dylan Strome has been phenomenal in Chicago, although to be fair, Nick Schmaltz has really he's put together a good start with 15 points in 19 games. But yeah, like I think their poster boy moves, for instance, when they traded away the 7th overall pick to try and accelerate the rebuild process, they acquired Derek Stefan, Antti Raanta. Those moves just haven't paid off. They haven't been able to take that next step. They tried to accelerate things. It's working now, but I think we're at a point now where for the next few years, we might see Arizona in that mushy middle, sort of like Minnesota of years past, where maybe they make the playoffs, but I see it tough for them to really make some noise beyond that.
Yeah, they're interesting, and it's another good test case, like you said, of like teams with no top end talent, like the lack of the proven superstar, like what they can actually do come playoff time. I don't know, they're a good story, right? Like,
market like that needs a competitive hockey team, and I'm certainly glad that they're off to a good start. And it seems like a group of players that, yeah. And at least, I mean, they're a group of underdogs, so they've got some sort of identity, and that's at least something that works in their favor. But yeah, like I look at a team over the past decade, like the Montreal Canadiens, they never had that star talent, and sure, they were a good team and consistently made the playoffs for quite some time, but they never really seemed to do any damage in the playoffs. And I think the ultimate goal of any franchise is to win a Stanley Cup. I just think that the way their team trajectory is going right now, they need to get a little bit lucky to land that star talent. And I think, I mean, they've got one really nice piece in Clayton Keller, who I'm a huge fan of. But, you know, for instance, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, I just don't think he's quite the same defenseman that he was a few years ago either. So I think you're a little bit lacking in the high-end talent department there.
Roberto Luongo, he can't stay away from the Panthers.
Yes, and I think it's funny because it's so blatantly obvious that that was a cap circumvention sort of decision, and there was certainly a handshake deal done in place that was going to happen, because by retiring, Vancouver gets screwed over. They now carry a $3 million dead cap hit, but Florida ended up benefiting out of that. And from Luongo's perspective, because he retired, he wasn't going to officially get the money that was still owed on his contract. And so I think it was pretty obvious if Luongo was going to retire that he was going to return to the Panthers in some sort of capacity, just so there was some reason for Florida to be paying him some dough. So, yeah, that's probably part of a handshake deal that was done in the offseason. Yeah, he's a beauty. Like, you can't say enough good things about Roberto Luongo. Everyone that I've talked to has had nothing but rave reviews about him as a person. He's a great personality. He's just so funny on Twitter. He's self-deprecating, which a lot of people can relate to. You often don't see that out of professional athletes. And yeah, he's just an overall beauty.
I'm about it. The Canucks, we need to talk about them a little bit, because my favorite thing about the Canucks is that they lead their division in point differential, and they're third right now.
Yeah.
It's weird. You don't see that very often.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has been that their October schedule, if you look into quality of competition data, was the easiest in the league. So I think that certainly plays a role into it. And of course, you get a little bit of puck luck along the way. But October was a genuinely solid month for them, not only because they beat up on those opponents, but they were legitimately dominating at even strength. Their special teams were very good. It just, on the whole, was very convincing. And the fact that they banked those early points was huge, because they've dropped, I want to say, 5 of their last 7. They just won the other night against Nashville, which is a huge victory, because Novembers have been notoriously difficult for them. Last season, for instance, they got off to, again, an excellent start in October, and they dropped 14 of 16 games, a stretch that started in November. So it's one of those things where they've looked pretty impressive to date, but I think a lot of people are still cautiously optimistic just because in Vancouver, we've seen so many instances of the team doing well in October only to crumble before Christmas is even over. So that's a story where I think if they can hold their own, they have a tough schedule. They're playing a ton in November so far, and you can see how that's affected their play. But if they can hold their own and just weather the storm here, then they have a good shot at making the playoffs for sure.
Is there any chance the Sharks could pull a 2018-19 Blues?
I mean, you never say never, but I'm not personally a huge believer in the Sharks. I think they lost key depth. They, of course, had Joe Pavelski go, who is their captain, their heart and soul type player, but he was also still really productive for them and a key piece in their top six. And so obviously he's departed. Jonas Donskoy, who we mentioned is thriving in Colorado, he's an example of a player who probably would have been able to step up in Pavelski's void and help out offensively, but he's of course gone. Gustav Nyquist, who they traded for at the deadline last year, he walked in free agency. So they've lost a lot of their key guns that got them far and deep into the postseason last year. And beyond that, I mean, Joe Thornton's another year older. Eric Karlsson just doesn't look the same, which is pretty terrifying to think, given that he's making $11.5 million per year for the next eight seasons. And so to me, I just see an overall aging core. I think they're not too far out of it as far as making the postseason. This is a team that if their goaltending is even close to average, which it hasn't been for a very long time, I want to say that their save percentage last year was 31st in the regular season, and Martin Jones has been awful again. So I think that to me is the most puzzling thing. They didn't address their goaltending. But I think if that rebounds even a little bit and you have goalies whose save percentages aren't in the 800s, then San Jose, they can make the playoffs, but I don't think they have the same horses to go deep in the postseason and win a cup again. Or, well, they haven't won a cup, but just going deep in the postseason.
The last thing, and we've got to wrap up here. Dallas, they've won, I think, 8 of 10. Corey Perry getting his 1,000th game, I believe, tonight. Shout out to him for making it that far. What do you think of the Stars? Do you think that this is a team on the upward trajectory? Do you think this is a team that can really start to break through?
This is an interesting one for me because going into the season, I was pretty skeptical of the Stars. I thought that they were really lucky with goaltending last year between Khudobin and, of course, their starter Ben Bishop. They were, I think, top five, top three in the league in save percentage. And Bishop, who's typically been a 915 type starter, a league average number one, played out of his mind. So that was one of those things that went really well for them that I didn't see sustainable going into this season. And we've seen a little bit of regression in that vein. I don't know. I've just never been terribly fond of the Stars as far as the roster construction. I think Jamie Benn and Alexander Radulov, while they're great players, they are starting to slowly show signs of decline. I'm a huge fan of Miro Heiskanen on the back end. I think that's one area of the Stars team that, especially when John Klingberg is firing, who I want to say is on the IR right now, but when those guys sort of get going, their blue line's really good. But on the whole, I just don't think that they have enough depth as it stands. And sure, could they sneak into the playoffs? I could see it. But to me, I don't think this is a team that escapes round one of the playoffs if they do make it.
All right. Well, this has been a pleasure as always, man. Is there anything we can check out from you this week at The Athletic Vancouver?
Yeah. So I have So, I mean, again, this is probably going to be of interest mostly for Canucks fans, but at theathletic.com, I wrote a column on Monday. I spoke to a bunch of league sources and got to the bottom of Troy Stetcher's long-term future with the Canucks. He's got an expiring contract. He's an RFA, so the Canucks can still hold his rights, but there's been a lot of trade rumors circulating about him, and I basically just unpacked some of the factors that will affect his future, got into the potential trade market for him and the league perception if the Canucks end up flipping him in the offseason, and yeah, just a lot of behind the scenes on what's going on in that predicament.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate the time as always, sir. Keep up the great work, and I will talk to you again soon.
Always happy to be on, man.
All right, we're back on the Chase Thomas podcast. I'm now joined by Wes Blankenship. He's been covering Georgia football for years, an avid Atlanta sports aficionado. We unfortunately are in the same city with the predicament of Atlanta sports right now, and I was almost mad online about the Braves and the reported interest in Mike Moustakas and all of that stuff. But we're not going to get into the Braves. We're going to get into Georgia-Auburn weekend because I am an Auburn guy. You are a Georgia guy. I wanted to pick your brain on what you think going into this Saturday, because now it's even more interesting in that Gus Malzahn was listed as the favorite for the Arkansas job from Bruce Feldman this week on The Athletic. And then you have Georgia not allowing a rushing TD getting pro this season, which is still insane to me. But also, they're number four in the college football playoff. So they hopped Alabama. Bama's five. A lot riding on Georgia going into Auburn this weekend. How are you feeling about this matchup? Are you nervous at all about going into Jordan-Hare?
Chase, thanks first and foremost for having me on tonight. No, listen, Georgia's defense is what it is. There's a reason why the Bulldogs are in the top four of the college football playoff this week. I know they had the bad loss to South Carolina, but they got two good wins against Florida, and say what you will about Notre Dame, still a top 25 win, something that Alabama doesn't have, and that's why Alabama fans are upset. But if you look at the history of the college football playoff and the teams that have thrived in it, the teams that have better defenses are the ones that make it, and they're the ones that go deep into it. And right now, Georgia is the second best defense in the country behind Ohio State. Now, listen, are their stats padded a little bit, and will they continue to be padded this week against Bo Nix, a true freshman? Absolutely. They faced a couple backup quarterbacks. They faced some true freshmen in there as well, and that only helps you, rather. But Auburn's defense giving up 17 points per game. Georgia's defense giving up 10 points per game. I know it's at home, and I think that's what's kind of cut into this spread. Georgia's 2.5, 3-point favorites, depending on where you look. And I think the difference there is Bo Nix. I think that will be the difference in this week's game. And even though Auburn's defense, once again, a really solid, stout group like Georgia faced against Florida a few weeks back, Georgia still does have guys on offense. James Coley showed that he can use the weapons that Georgia has. There are no slouches at recruiting. We know that. And it seems like Kirby is almost in this mindset where once he gets a lead, he's going to put the clamps down. He did that against Mizzou. He did it against Kentucky. And we did see them have the ability to open it up against Florida with Dominic Blaylock and Lawrence Cager getting into the end zone. And with all reports that Lawrence Cager is healthy, I think Georgia's offense, and who can forget DeAndre Swift, two of the longest runs in his career against the Auburn Tigers. So Georgia has the offensive weapons against a really good defense, and they have the drastic advantage, I think, on the defensive side of the ball against a freshman quarterback.
What is your biggest concern about containing Bo Nix this weekend?
I just think the fact that he is pretty good at home. I mean, you look at the numbers,
yeah, and he's a totally different quarterback. It's like 8 TDs, 2 picks, and he's like completing 80%. Like everything is different at home for him, which shouldn't be that surprising with a true freshman quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, the crowd's on his side, and he's only getting better as the year goes on. Auburn kid through and through. It's his dream to play there. But an SEC defense is what it is. And the numbers that Georgia has on paper right now are just unbelievable with the amount of points they've given up against SEC competition. They're in the double digits. The next closest team is Auburn, and it's like not even close. It's like 50 points more than Georgia's given up in SEC play. So it's definitely going to be the best test defensively that Nick's has seen this season. I know you go in the swamp and you play against that Florida defense on their home turf. That's brutal as well. But Georgia's defense is a complete unit. They're the group that Kirby's wanted since he took over in Athens. And we're seeing that now with the way they're dominating everybody they play.
Are you concerned at all with what Jake Fromm is doing the last couple of weeks? Or is there any type, or is there any kind of concern where you're like, oh, is he kind of regressing? Is there anything that you've seen the last couple of weeks where you're like, oh, this is a problem?
I think with Jake Fromm, you just have a guy that only knows 100%. And like I said earlier, it really looks like Kirby, once the team has a lead, look at the difference in the way the offense was running against Mizzou in the first quarter. You get out to an early lead. You got like four wideouts. You're doing misdirections. And then the rest of the game, it looks like the Georgia offense we've seen in every other game except Florida. It's tough to just go 100 miles an hour back down to 50, but I think that's what they're doing with Jake Fromm. That's the way Kirby wants to run the offense. That's the way he thinks he can win the game. So if they're asking Jake this week to go 100%, flip the switch, and pull out all the stops that they'll need to pull out against this Auburn defense, I feel like Jake's going to go in there and have a strong game.
Well, how do you think it's ultimately going to unfold? What do you think is going to happen on this Saturday at 3:30? Do you think the UGA will be fine? They'll win? Is this high scoring? What do you think ultimately happens on Saturday?
I think ultimately it's the exact opposite of what we saw in primetime with LSU and Alabama with a high scoring game last Saturday. I expect defense, brutal, bloody type of game. And like I mentioned earlier, turnovers will be the difference in this one. I think Georgia gets at least one off of Bo Nix, and they use that. And the stats reflect what they've reflected all year. Georgia's defense just slightly better against SEC competition, and that's the difference for this game. And I think they do cover that 3-point spread. I don't want to say easily, but when it's only 2.5 or 3 points, I think easily takes on a whole different meaning. So I think they do cover it easily.
I'm conflicted. Obviously, I want Auburn to win this game. But then again, I really want to move on from the Gus Malzahn era. And if he wins this, it feels like to me he secures his job for at least one more year. I don't know. I don't like this feeling going into it of like, I obviously want Auburn to win, but at the same time, I really don't want Gus Malzahn to get another 7-year extension for being pretty solid in 10-2. I'm very conflicted.
You sound like Georgia fans during the end of Mark Richt's career.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what it's like. The offense is just not good. And he's an offensive guy. Like, Kevin Steele is the most valuable asset to this team right now. I don't know. I think it's time, but I'm concerned that they actually have a real shot here and could beat this Georgia team. And I don't know. I'm going to say, I haven't made a prediction yet, but I am going to say I think Auburn wins this. I really, if this was not at home, I wouldn't even consider it, but I have not seen enough from this Georgia offense that makes me a big time believer. And I don't know. We'll have to see. But I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be low scoring. I think it's going to be physical. I think Fromm's going to take some bad hits. I'm interested to see how Auburn's defensive line stacks up against Georgia's offensive line. I think it'll be good. It'll be fun. But we'll just have to see. Well, I know you have to run, Wes. So you have this great new podcast idea, Back Porch Sports. Can you give a little snippet as to why people should listen and what it is and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, sure. So a few months ago, I just kind of started randomly, just stream of my thoughts on college football, the NFL, what have you, on my back porch and just made them quick little social media segments. And, you know, I got enough good feedback from it to be dangerous and figured I'd turn it into a podcast idea. So got a couple out right now. One's on YouTube and the links are already up on Spotify. If you listen to your podcast there, it should be coming out on YouTube and or on iTunes through Apple's podcast here in a couple of days. But yeah, I got a couple up right now on YouTube, just talking about Auburn, Georgia this week. So you should check it out if you like hearing why Georgia fans should feel confident about their playoff standings. A lot of people doubting their number four ranking. My latest episode will tell you why you should feel very good about it.
All right, well, go do that. Go follow Wes. Keep up with his new podcast and everything else that he's got going on. Wes, I appreciate it. Good luck with everything in the future, and go Tigers.
All right. Thank you, man. Take care.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com